So the story, 31 weeks and go. It begins. 6 days, God created everything. 6 days. How many of you guys read your chapter this week? Awesome. 12 pages, I think. Not a big deal at all. And it's excerpts from the Bible. So if you don't have the story yet, pick one up, grab one digital, and read chapter 2 this coming week. So chapter 1, we read this. God created in 6 days. He created everything from nothing. He made the earth. He made the day. He made the nights. He made the heavens and the earth. He made the day and the night. He gave the earth an atmosphere. He separated the land from the waters on earth. He made every kind of green plant that we see on this earth. Every kind of tree, every kind of bush, every kind of flower, every kind of fruit tree that you can eat from, every kind of vegetable plant that you can eat from. Beyond the earth, he made every planet. He made every star. He made every moon. He made every type of animal. He made all the animals under the sea. He made all the animals in the air, in the trees. He made all of the animals on the ground. And that's one area where I'm kind of an old King James fan. I like the way it said, all the creeping things that creepeth upon the ground or something like that. I love that. It's kind of creepy. So he made all that. And God made life, and it was good. And then God made human life. He made man in his own image. And he said it was what? Very good. 6 days. 6 days, God says, here's life. This is what the story opens up. The whole Bible, this is how it opens up. Poof, here's life. I love that. This is how the whole thing starts. And it's life. It's alive. God brings life. He is the source of life. He is the creator of life. He is the beginning of life. Life was and is God's thing. That's what he does. Life was his idea. Life originated in God's head. It came from his imagination. It was his engineering. It was God's system. It was his power that brought forth life. And then in chapter two of Genesis, all of this is in chapter one of the story. Some people were confused about that. Chapter one in the story covers Genesis chapter 1-9. So today I'm referring to Genesis, the actual Bible. So Genesis chapter 2 is when we pass over into a zooming in of the life that God gave to humans. And I love the way that it talks about this, that God made man out of dirt and he breathed life into his nostrils. It's kind of gross when you're thinking about the nostrils, but getting past that, it's so intimate. So here's life. It's just great. Let's read that. That's Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 says, "And the Lord formed the man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life." I get such a visual on that. And even auditory, you can just hear. And this thing that God made out of the dust of the ground comes to life. There's life. And the man became a living being. Life, 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 life. That's how the whole story starts, is life. Adam was put in the garden, this garden that was full of life. And the garden even had a tree in it that was called the tree of life. There's life everywhere. That's how it starts. "And the Lord made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. In the middle of the garden," pardon me, "in the middle of the garden there was were the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil." And Adam's job was to care for all of this life, to care for the garden, to care for all of this around him. Told that he took man and he put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to care for it. And Adam could eat from any tree he wanted to, from all of this life around him. Here's life. Here's life around you. Here's life in you. Here's life around you, and you can eat the life. You can even eat the tree that's called the tree of life. There was one restriction, only one restriction. If you went to your small group or your Sunday school today, this is what your study was on, was a tree of knowledge of good and evil. And they said, and God said, you cannot eat of this one. That was the one restriction. Everything else was free game. All of this life around you, you can eat it up. But not that one tree. That's it. So God made man. And God needed someone to do his laundry. So he made a woman. I'm just kidding. They didn't have clothes back then. They were naked. There was no laundry. They were naked and they were happy. Wow. The real reason God created a woman was because the garden was just too quiet without her. Okay, joking aside for a minute, the real reason God said it's not good for man to be alone. That's in the Bible. It's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to create a helper for him to care for, to help him care for all of this life around him, to care for the garden, to work in it together, a helper. And that's where women came from. They were put in the garden, full of life. Their job was to care for that life. And even the amazing part that God made man and woman, and now they had the ability to make life. That when they came together in love, love produced life. Be fruitful, multiply. That's what God wanted. It's life, 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 life. The whole opening of the story is life and death. Because there was a twist when we get into chapter 3. Something happened one day. The serpent twisted God's words and caused the woman to question God's terms. You will not surely die, the serpent said to the woman. And he enticed her to eat from the forbidden tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. As if all of this life around them wasn't enough. You can eat from anything, even the tree of life itself, but not the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That wasn't good enough for her or for her husband, because we're told that the temptation was successful. She took and ate of it, and she gave some to her husband, and he ate of it. All of this life. And God says, if you eat of this, you're going to die. And they choose that. And looking at it from this side of the fence, it's easy for us to say, oh, how could you do that? But when we look in the mirror, how could I do that? I mean, sometimes we choose to step outside of God's terms, and we see where that gets us sometimes. Surely you're not going to die, the serpent said. She gave in. And here's where the laundry part comes in. See, ladies, you would have never had to have ever seen a washer or dryer if it weren't for sin. You knew there was something wrong about that, didn't you? I mean, there's just something. Every time you do laundry, there's just something wrong. We shouldn't be doing laundry. And we shouldn't be. After they sinned, that's when they realized they needed clothes. That's when they realized they were naked. They were ashamed. And so they made clothes out of fig leaves. And they heard the life giver walking through the garden. And they hid from the life giver. And I think we read over that time and we get used to that. And I think looking at it from this angle of looking at God just bringing life and life and life, the life giver, look at all he gave, look at all he did, and they were hiding. And you wouldn't think that would be natural, that wouldn't be normal. This guy was the guy, he brought life. There was nothing that interrupted their relationship. They were unhindered. They were not ashamed of who they were. They were not afraid of him. And here he is the life giver, the life bringer, the originator of life. Breathed life into their nostrils, into his nostrils, made woman from a rib. And now they're hiding from him. And we look at that easily and say, why? Why would you hide? But once again, when we look in the mirror, why do I hide sometimes? Why do I hide from the life giver? And so they were hidden. They tried to hide themselves from God. Because they knew that they had tried to live life on their own terms, and they stepped outside of God's terms. And they were afraid of God, and they should have been. God brings about the curse on the man, on the woman, and on the serpent. And he kicks them out of the garden and away from the tree of life. So death entered the world. Adam and Eve had two sons, Cain and Abel. Good job. Abel took care of the livestock and Cain took care of the gardens. And they both brought offerings of their work, of their labor to God. Cain brought some of his produce, some of his fruits, just some. It's not very descriptive, it's just some. Very specific about what Abel brought. We're told that Abel brought some of the best portions of his firstborn livestock, firstborn animals. We're told that God looked at Abel's offering with favor, but he did not look at Cain's offering with favor. And so Cain was jealous and he was angry. And out of jealousy, he killed his very own brother. That wasn't life. That wasn't what God intended. Cain went out on his own terms. He wasn't living on God's terms. God's terms, he was a life bringer. He was a life giver. Cain took life into his own hands, and he went against God's terms. He went against God's terms in, at the beginning when it comes to giving a suitable sacrifice and a suitable offering. And then he went way against God's terms in killing his own brother. Cain took life. It was the opposite of what God had done. God was a life giver. Cain became a life taker, a murderer, a death bringer. And so Cain, like his father and his mother, he made a choice contrary to God's terms for life, and it resulted in death. Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden. They couldn't eat from the tree of life any longer. Their decision to live life on their own terms resulted in death. Cain's decision to live life on his own terms, it resulted in the death of his brother and his own separation from his family. God sent Cain away. And then we're told through the next, the lineage then from Abraham's next week, from Adam to Noah, that by the time we get to Noah, that really all of mankind, they were living by their own terms. They had disregarded, disrespected, they had rebelled against God's terms, and they were living on their own terms. We see this in Genesis chapter 6. It says, the Lord saw how great man's wickedness on earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. That's a strong sentence. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind whom I have created from the face of the earth, men and animals, and creatures that move along the ground and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Many of us know the story of Noah and Noah's ark. And we know that he and his family got to live because Noah found favor in God's eyes. Noah was living according to God's terms. The rest of the world was living according to their terms. But Noah was living according to God's terms. That's why he was accredited as being a righteous man. So the world stopped living according to God's terms, and that brought death. But Noah was living according to God's terms, and that brought life, not just to him, but his whole family. Noah had a relationship with God. It's going to take some notes on the first 9 chapters of Genesis, the first chapter of the story. Flip your bulletins over to the notes section, grab a pen or pencil. And today is very, very, very simple. Today is foundational. It's just, I wanted, as we start these 31 weeks, I want us to look at this and get a good understanding of the foundation of what this story was built on, what this story is based on, where we're at, where we're going, where we're going to end up. So that's what we're doing today. Today is not meant to patronize anybody. So if you're thinking, wow, this is really simple, it's supposed to be this morning. I want to remind us all of some things. So back to the basics, back to the foundation. Be reminded that the Bible is about God desiring, that God desires for all of mankind to have a relationship with him. That's what the story is about. And shared very, very clearly in these first nine chapters of Genesis, this happens on God's terms, not man's terms. For us to have a relationship with God, we have to do so on His terms, not on our terms. And we see that in these stories we just looked at. As long as Adam and Eve were living according to God's terms, they could walk with Him. They could be in the garden with Him. They had an uninterrupted relationship with God. It was unhindered. As long as it was according to God's terms. But when they took matters into their own hands and they lived according to their own terms, that relationship was interrupted. That relationship was interfered with. Story of Cain and Abel. Before Cain murders Abel, God has a conversation with him. And this will be somewhere in your Bibles, or even this is in the story also. Whichever book you want to underline it in, or asterisk, or star, or whatever, highlight, whatever your source of drawing attention to this, then I would encourage you to do so, because this is a key verse for what we're talking about today. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast?" Now, keep in mind, this is before Cain has done anything. It's before he's acted out on his anger. And God's talking to him. He said, "If you do what is right, will you not be accepted?" Thinking about the sacrifice. Maybe God was thinking about what was in his heart. The hatred, the anger, the jealousy. If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. I was talking to my children. It might be hard for you to believe, but my kids like to talk. What is that term? The fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. Yeah, it is. It is. So hopefully they didn't get some of my other issues. But yes, they like to talk. And that's not always a bad thing. But in class, that's been an issue already. We've only been in school a couple weeks. And I was talking to them and that their brain has to master their mouth. And they have to be in charge of what they say, when they say it, how loud they say it, how much, how many words they use to say it. And so Judah, of course, you know, he's my youngest, and he likes the idea of power and control. And yeah, there would be some good things to go with that, and there might be some negative things to go with that. So I'm looking to the positive hopefuls. But he really locked into that, and he said, "I need to be the master of my lips." And I was like, "You get it. You get it." And that's what God is saying to Cain. He says, you got to beware. There's sin, and it's crouching at your door. It's crouching waiting for you. It wants you. You have to master it. You have to be bigger. And that's a key verse. Because see, if we do what is right by God, won't everything be all right between us and Him? If we're on His terms in our relationship with Him, that's when things are going well between us and God, between you and God, between me and God. It's like with Adam and Eve, with Cain and Abel, or like all the people during Noah's time, when they step outside of His terms, that's when things get messed up. That's when chaos happens. When we're tempted to take matters into our own hands, when we're tempted to live life on our own terms, using our own opinions, using our own thoughts and our own judgments that are contrary to God's. Now, when we're using our thoughts and judgments that are in line with God's, that simply means that God's been wearing off on us and we're living up to the likeness that we were made into Him with. So yes, we can have thoughts, we can have ideas. If they're in line with God's, then you're in the right path. You're in the right way. You're living life according to God's terms. But when we're doing things and our thoughts and our intentions and our directives, they are not God's terms, we got a problem. Sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. God's words to Cain, and thousands of years later, those words apply to every one of us here. I don't care who you are. I don't care how long you've been a Christian, or even if you haven't even given your life to Christ yet. That is a true statement for every one of us. We are all battling that. Whatever your sin is, whatever it is that gets you, it's crouching in your door, it wants to have you, and you have to master it. The desire to live life on our own terms is always going to be there. But that's not what brings real life. That brings wickedness, that brings evil, and eventually death. It's the same thing in Noah's time. We see that at work. People were living according to their own terms instead of God's terms. And when man goes along with God's plan, things are good for man. But when man is not in sync with God's plan, then things are chaos. Noah found favor with God because he was a righteous man. He was living according to God's terms. So we have this tree of life. Let's talk about this for a minute. So the story of the Bible is a redemption story. It's a redemption story about God showing man that his ways, that God's ways, are the way to life. Just to get a quick overview. The beginning of the story in Genesis, God gave the tree of life to man. But man rejected God's ways, he rejected God's terms, and he lost out on the intended blessing of life, on the ability to eat from the tree of life whenever they wanted to, all day long, every day of the week. And they were kicked out of the garden. So that's the beginning of the story. And then when we move into the middle of the story, when we get to the kind of the fulcrum of the whole story, pardon me. When we get to the fulcrum of the story, the gospels, the middle. God offers new life to man through the tree of death, the cross. So we have the tree of life. And now to fix what happened here, we have a tree of death where Jesus took our sin and he paid for it on the tree of death, on the cross. In Galatians, Paul talks about the cross as a tree. He says, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree. Paul's reference to the cross. It was a tree at one time. He took our curse. He became the curse for us. He died our death on the cross, the tree of death, so that we could have life. And then the tree of life makes another appearance. Did you know the tree of life shows up somewhere else in the Bible other than Genesis? It does. It's a really neat place where it shows up. Tree of life shows up in Revelation. Tree of life shows up there. It shows up in chapter 2, and when God is writing letters to the churches, the seven churches, at the very beginning, and to one of those churches, he says, whoever comes, you'll be able to eat from the tree of life. I remember that. That was in the first book of the story, the first book of the Bible. And here we are at the very last book. And in fact, the very last chapter is where we read about the new heaven, the new earth. In Revelation chapter 22, starting with verse 1, it says, then the angel showed me the river of the water of, it's the story, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb. Down the middle of the great street of the city, on each side of the river stood the tree of life. There it is. It's waiting for us. God didn't destroy the tree of life. It's a redemption story. It's a story of bringing us back to the tree of life. That's what the whole story is. If you ever get lost in the Bible and you're trying to figure out, how does this fit in? Then take a step back and say, how is this story trying to lead me back to the tree of life? How is it trying to lead me back to a redemptive way of life that he's redeeming me back to being able to eat from the tree of life? So on each side of the river stood the tree of life bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. It's a powerful tree. So the end of the story. In Revelation, we are told that the tree of life is waiting for us in the paradise of God. That's an exciting, exciting truth to know. The tree of life is, it's alive, it exists, it's still around, and it's waiting for us. For all of us who have put our faith in Christ, for all of us who have accepted him as our Savior, the tree of life is waiting for us. Just verses down from that, we see that this is God's prescription for those that are coming to heaven, those that have accepted. He said, blessed are those who wash their robes. And that's a reference to blessed are those who have been saved by Jesus, who have been washed clean by Jesus' sacrifice, by his blood. Blessed are those who wash their robes that they may have the right to the tree of life and may go through the gates into the city. We get the tree of life, church. We get to eat of it someday. See, this is the story. This is the redemption story that shows us that God's way is the only way back to the tree of life. You can't earn your way back to the tree of life. You can't get to the tree of life on your own terms. That's how we got away from the tree of life. The only way we can get back to the tree of life is by God's terms. And so the story from beginning to end has the bookend of this, the bookends of this tree of life. And that's the beginning and that's the end. But we're right here. We're somewhere in between the tree of life in Genesis and the tree of life in Revelation. So where are you today with all this? Let's take a moment for personal reflection. We're going to be doing this on every Sunday, and we're going to try and really make every Sunday super personal so we can grow and see how the story applies to me, how the story moves me. So I want you to ask yourself and be very, very, very honest. How close do I feel with God right now? And maybe you're in a Noah moment, where you're consciously making righteous decisions. Maybe you're in a Cain moment where you're fighting some things and sin's crouching at your door. Maybe you're Adam and Eve in the innocence of the garden time in your life. Where are you? Maybe you're ashamed and you're hiding from God right now. Where are you? See, your decisions to operate on your own terms instead of God's terms, it hinders your relationship with him. That's the bottom line. That's where it is. That's where, if you look at where you are, that's how you got there. If you're in a good relationship with him, it's because you've been going about life according, actually, I'll reverse that back over here. I've been going this way. I don't want to confuse your visual mind. But if you've been following God's terms and you're living a righteous life, then that's why you're there. That's why you're in a good relationship with God. It's because you've chosen to live your life according to his terms. If you're hiding and you feel ashamed, or if you're struggling with some things and sin is crouching at your door, or maybe you're so far out that every intention of your heart is wicked and evil, like the people during Noah's time. It, wherever you are, if you're on this side, the only way you got there was because you started to live life on your own terms instead of God's terms. We see this in all the stories we looked at, Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel and Noah and the wickedness that existed on earth. So as we take some time for personal reflection, ask yourself, what are some areas where I need to follow God's terms in my life? Every one of us, I mean, none of us are walking the perfect road. None of us are walking perfectly straight down that road. You can be close to it, but there's going to be some areas, some paths that you've taken on your own terms. What are those? And I want you to really ask yourself that question. What are some areas in my life? What are some places in my life where I really need to follow God's terms? Because I've been following my own. What's keeping me from more life right now? God's the life giver. He's the life bringer. That's what God does. He gives life. He brings life. It's what he did through his son, Jesus. It's what he did through his son's death, was he brought life from death. That's pretty amazing. He brought life from nothing in the beginning. And then he went one step further with his son. He brought life from death. He gave us life from his death, and he even brought his own son back from the dead, raising him to life 3 days later from the tomb. He's a life bringer. He wants to give you life, but what's keeping you from that right now? On a very personal level, what sin is hindering the life that God intends for me? What sin is it? What are you struggling with? And I'm not sharing these things to embarrass you before God this morning. I'm sharing this because I know that every one of us have some things that keep us from being as close with God as we should be. And if we're going to embark on this story, and we're spending 31 weeks on this story of redemption, and the story of life, and the story of love, and the story of grace, then we need to get started off on the right foot, and we need to start examining ourselves and say, okay, what do I need to do to start this journey? Day one, week one of 31, what do I need to do? What sin is crouching at my door that's hindering me from the life that God wants to give me? We are part of this story. This redemption story. This story of God who desires his people to have a relationship with him on his terms. Are you trying to operate on your own terms? Are you trying to navigate life on your own standards? How's that going for you? Because eventually it's going to bite you. If it's not biting you right now, today's a good day to reflect on that. Today's a good day to look and see how my story is fitting in with his story, how my story fits in with his terms. What's keeping you from having more life right now? What sin is keeping you from experiencing God's story in its fullness? The invitation to join in God's story is out there for us all. But we have to accept it on his terms. We have to accept it on his terms, not our terms. God says, I'm inviting you into my story on my terms.